Hi, I'm Korra.
I'm the Avatar. You gotta deal with it.
So you're like the Avatar or something. Big deal.
Who doesn't want a bison as their best friend?
You're the master of all the elements. You should know how to drive.
And then she does.
Does this mean I'm the master now?
Food for thought.
I've never had a girlfriend to hang out with and talk to before. I'll destroy you.
I filmed the whole thing if you want to watch it.
The Avatar thanks you for your loyal service.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DonWuFang.net. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Mel.
Hello.
Allie.
Hi.
Sam.
Hi.
And Ben.
Ding dong, the witch is dead.
Yeah, relevant because we're discussing Long Live the Queen, the 10th episode of Book 3 of The Legend of Korra. That's basically all we're going to talk about, some brief news before that, but this is quite an exciting episode to discuss. Yeah, so the episode came out Friday, as usual, on Nick.com. It was leaked before that on Wednesday, late Wednesday night. Not super relevant. An unknown who leaked it seemed to come from somewhere. It was somewhere in Nicker or other websites. Funny leaked in a funny way with a Tumblr account referencing Zaheer's speech from this episode. But again, I don't think it's a big deal. Came out 2 days before, not really many effects. Before that, though, I think the bigger deal is Nick releasing 3 GIFs from the episode accidentally on their website, which were included Zaheer killing the queen.
Well,
that happened.
So I was really pissed about that. I didn't want to know that was going to happen before we saw it. So that sucks. Yeah, that was just horrible. And honestly, my opinion on the leak is it mostly offset those gifts. So I think that was the intent of the leak. So that was good. But yeah, Nick, don't do that again. Don't release gifts of the major things that are going to happen in your episodes before.
Stop it.
It's just very frustrating at this point.
Confused.
I don't understand.
Yeah. That ignited some unnecessary debate.
Prematurely.
To clarify, this was just Nick's website team doing this, but like, I don't understand why they have to be working so far in advance here. Because obviously, this is from like a Best Ben's slideshow that they make. This is part 3, and they've been putting these together. It's like, okay, let's just make it after it happened. Nick just completely opening them up to making mistakes and having people capitalize on them. So it's not good. Not happy with Nick. I just want to see the rest of it.
When are we ever happy with Nick? Let's be honest. Oh,
I've got some choice words for Nick. And in fact, I got to meet Stephen Blum this past weekend.
Oh, my God.
He signed my book 1 of Korra, but we talked for like a good 5 minutes about what Nick did. And Stephen Blum thought it was pretty wrong of them, what they did to the fans.
To move it online and stuff like that?
Yeah, just like without much notice. And then the fact that like, we got the announcement of Book 3 premiering, like, one week before?
Yeah,
did he mention that, or did you, like, bring that up to him?
It's just what we talked about.
That's
he both kind of brought it
up.
Yeah,
the Steve Blum voice actor of Amon. And, that's good. I'm sure people involved in the show are pissed with the treatment, but I don't know. Old news at this point, Nick is bad. Let's move on to the episode.
Exactly.
Please, let's get off this. I'm already
so,
mad.
Long Live the Queen. Written by Tim Hedrick, directed by Melchor Zweier, new director of the season. Pretty notable episode in many respects. I think it's certainly a lot of discussion points to get into. But the question is, what did you think? How shocked were you at the big events? Do you think it was a good episode? Start with Mel.
Okay. I want to preface this by saying that Allie watched this leak before I got to watch it, right?
Listen.
And she would not stop texting me about whatever it is that happened.
Listen.
But would not tell me what it was.
Okay.
You would not want me to tell you.
So
what
were
happened.
You weren't surprised that there was a big event? Same as like
well,
the
no,
gifts
I yeah, released. I knew there was a big event, but she didn't tell me whatever it was. And when it did happen, I was like, oh. But here's my thing about the big event is that and this is why I didn't, you know, in hindsight, looking back now, the GIF getting released, now that we know what it goes to, like, it was more shocking how it happened, not what happened. And that's what's annoying about that GIF getting released, because it gave away the big shocker in that. That being said, it was still a really big shock.
What did you think of the episode overall?
Overall, I thought the episode was... it was not as good as the previous episode, in my opinion. But that... I mean, I don't know if you... I didn't listen to the podcast, so I don't know if you mentioned my thoughts in the previous podcast, but...
we did, I believe.
I thought this episode was a bit of a step down, just because... for the most part, the best part of the episode was those that last minute or so when that happened. But, I mean, I liked it. I didn't dislike it. I thought it was a step down from the previous week.
Okay. Allie, were you shocked, and what'd you think?
First of all, Mel, if I told you what happened, you would not have...
Okay, Allie, okay, let's get to the relevant.
No, I mean, pretty much the same. I did like it, but... after watching it, I mean, I watched it a couple of times. Watching it, like, a second time, I think I was giving it too much credit because of the shock. Because, I mean, it was a huge shock. But other than that part, there were bits I did like, but most of it was kind of not really slow, but not really interesting. I did like, you know, the Kurosami in the desert, and Mako and Bolin was kind of a little frustrating, but we'll get to that. But I did like it. It wasn't as good as 309, but I did like it.
Okay. Sam?
I don't know. It was an episode, I guess.
Were you shocked?
It was an episode.
We play podcast bingo. Sam says it was an episode.
I was very shocked, but I rewatched the episode a lot.
She sounds so shocked.
And you did it get worse on future viewings?
It did get, like, the shock is pretty much the best thing about the episode. Everything else is just... like, the shock makes the episode. That's it.
Do not trust in the 10th episode.
Okay. We will discuss other possible good things about it, but we'll see what you say then. Ben, what'd you think?
Well, I didn't see these GIFs because apparently I don't pay enough attention to what Nick posts online.
That's a good thing.
I mean, yeah, obviously shocking. Now, granted, I cheered when it happened because I didn't like the Earth Queen at all, but... how they killed her was very shocking, so... but I like the episode overall, and it's just another good episode in what's been a really good season overall.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great point. Just it's another solid, maybe even extremely good episode in Book 3. Book 3 is incredible so far. So here's my big talking point on this episode. Last episode, The Stakeout, was, in my opinion, the best core episode we've ever seen. But notable about that episode was how much better Act 3 was than the rest of it. But that being said, Acts 1 and 2 were also very good, I thought. This episode, I think the distinction is not in the acts, but in the A, B, and C plots. Yeah. The A plot is fantastic. All the stuff in Ba Sing Se, not involving Mako and Bolin. it's really good. It's shocking. I also think it's just genuinely good. I don't think it's just the shock factor. I think it's done well. I think the dialogue is very good. That being said, the B and C plots are not very good, I think. I actually think the Kor and Asami plot is pretty much a negative in the episode.
Which sucks, because that plot had a lot of potential.
It did, and it's like we get to see Kor and Asami bond more and have a slow-paced plot in the desert in this weird circumstance, but the dialogue is just extremely questionable, and I don't understand, and I'll point out every example.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, too. I think that they need new writers for dialogue.
So it's weird because Tim Hedrick wrote this episode, and of course we should say that when the writer of the episode hasn't necessarily written everything in the episode. It's a collaborative process, but we're going to assign it to him because he gets credited. It's weird because the Zaheer dialogue, most of it's good. Some of it's very good. There's some questionable ones, but all the stuff with Kor and Asami is like purposely written weirdly, and I don't think it works. It's like written in like a tacky, like I don't know what time period, but like 20s kind of way. I don't know if it's actually 20s dialogue, but I mean, which makes sense because this is the 20s. But you know,
I don't want to say it's cheap dialogue, but it took the easiest path to get to the points it was getting.
It also is very abrupt. Yeah. It's like, okay, this is what's happening and stuff like that. I also am pretty frustrated about the lack of interaction between Kor and Asami here. It's like, this is more like Book 2 Kor and Asami than the beginning of Book 3. Whereas they're just
stuff at each other.
Yeah, they're just there and they don't actually interact with each other. They're just doing things. Like,
what's that one trope?
Look for the trope. Everything has a trope.
Lesbians.
I don't...
Can we wait?
Regardless of any sort of romance between Korra and Asami, or possible
can
romance,
we discuss?
We're not going to discuss because that didn't happen in the episode. The thing, the problem is, like, regardless of that, their friendship, like, there wasn't even really friendship. I don't think it's as much as them, like, potentially downplaying any romantic interactions between Korra and Asami, which, based on the beginning of the season, could be there. But I think it's just more of them just botching the friendship scenes between them now.
Or maybe it's but not too gay.
See, but the problem is, I would be okay. It's like if they were, like, talking to each other, but they didn't go past a certain level, then you could say, like, it's that. But they're not even talking to each other, you know? That's what I'm saying.
They're just talking around each other.
They're just talking kind of around each other for most of it, yeah. They do talk to each other, but it's just very formally, you know? So... And the Mako and Bolin plot is pretty not good. So I think it's like an episode of three acts. I think there's a perfectly valid viewpoint to have with this episode, which is it's a tale of three plots: A plot, B plot, C plot. I think the perfectly valid viewpoint is the A plot is so good and shocking and interesting that this episode's excellent, and I'm fine with that. I don't think so. I want to take a more holistic view of it, but I think that's what some people are going to think. And I think certainly right away you'll think that, and maybe as time fades less so, but I think it's good to evaluate episodes holistically. So let's go through this and talk about what happens. Let's start with Act 1, which aside from like one scene I'd say is pretty unexciting. We start with Korra and Asami being like loaded onto the airship. We meet this weird cast of, weird crew of guys on the airship. I actually kind of like, first of all, no female side characters, right? But other than that, I think they're pretty interesting characters to introduce. We have Hookie, the captain.
And I don't like him. I think his dialogue is really bad.
Yeah, so his dialogue is the epitome of this like weird 20s thing that I'm talking about. Everything he says is like a cliche.
Oh yeah, I know what you're saying. Like from like as like a trope, not like a trope. Like I know what you're saying. It's like sort of dialogue lifted out of a movie from the 30s or something.
Yeah. Maybe 30s is better. The captain of the ship, yeah.
What does he say?
Like really...
I'll tell you. I have them written down, so we'll get to it when we're there. Then we have the weird crew member with his voice, which I kind of like.
I like him.
Yeah, he's...
Well, that's really specific. The one guy with that one voice.
You can tell what I mean. He has the distinctive voice. That guy.
The one with the eyes.
Well, the eyes is the queen, so...
I know what you're talking about.
So they head onto the ship. This is the guy that Asami convinces not to chain to her to the floor.
Oh, that dude, okay.
This guy. And Asami's just, like, smiling weirdly. Like, I don't know. Is this going to convince him? Asami's smiling that? It's interesting. Yeah, but anyway. It's really clever of Asami. Again, more Asami being smart. Hooray.
Which, here's my thing, though, is I don't, from a writing standpoint, I don't see the purpose of her having to purposely say, oh, tie me up there. They could have easily just done away with that entire dialogue exchange and tied her up
I'm fine with this. I think this is a character moment for Asami.
Yeah, also, can we just talk about the fact that she's doing things? She is finally a character.
She is also doing something.
That made me happy.
Yeah, but we shouldn't
doing stuff, Lori.
We shouldn't hold the fact that Asami is now actually a character to the fact that she wasn't before as a positive. It's more like, okay, good, finally we're doing this. Anyway, next is maybe the best scene of the entire episode. Like, maybe even better than the really shocking one, which is Bolin making small talk with Gazan and
I really love that scene.
It's so, it's like, you compare
that's actually probably my favorite scene.
Compare the dialogue of the desert, of them in the desert, to Bolin and Gazan's and Minghua's dialogue here, and it's so different. But anyway, before that is Mako just spewing off about he makes interesting points. He's like being logical and
but he's not being a very good detective. He's asking them straight up.
I mean, whatever, they're captured anyway.
Because these guys are so stupid, they're going to let out all the details of their plan, right?
Yeah.
Why'd you need Korra back alive?
It's very on the nose, but I think it makes... Mako's just a very on the nose character. Like, this is very in character for Mako.
Yeah.
I don't really... It's more... It's just a neutral talk. I don't know. But the real... I think the real star of this is Bolin relating to the guards and then asking Gazan three things about him, the last one being there's an unspoken attraction between you two. And then they look at each other and it's really well animated. And then he's like, 2 out of 3, not bad.
Wow, best impression ever.
That was good. I just want to know what the one he missed was.
I know. It's so well done.
Probably the mustache.
It's like Gone Girl.
The problem is... The problem is an unspoken attraction is not...
Oh, Allie's got it.
The problem is unspoken attraction is not factual, so how could Gazan, like, say that's true, right?
High five.
I don't know. Maybe Gazan noticed it or something.
He's just... Yeah, he's perceptive of it.
And they just don't talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, they haven't seen
each
other.
It's been 13 years, Dylan.
Actually, it was 13, but it felt it's like been 30.
80,
she said
years.
13.
But it felt yeah, no, he said 15, right? And then
no, I'm talking about Sam.
13.
Actually, it was 13, but it felt like 30. That's
can you
Gazan.
Need to stop?
I love Gazan's voice. We actually have
That's
him talking
not his
now.
Voice. Then stop trying to talk.
He's
in
so
his voice.
He's so interesting this episode, Gazan, and he said like one
is
word
your
before
new favorite
this.
Character?
I don't know. He's really cool though.
Better than
all you need to know is that the world's going to change after today, he says. I didn't do the impression.
Oh, yeah,
there.
Better. We should never forget.
Anyway, I thought the scene was just so well done. I'm very happy with this. Anyway, okay, next. Next we get the clip that we got, the preview clip, which is Rasami talking about how the ship is a Cabbage Corp airship, not a Future Industries one. So it's
good.
Cheap. And so everything just, it's a hunk of junk. That's the type of 30s tacky dialogue I'm talking about. So everything just instantly rips off of the wall.
It's hunk of junk, Mark Hamill.
And I don't know, this is the type of like a simplified plot that Korra does sometimes, that it's like, I feel like we can think on a somewhat higher level here than, okay, this is a Cabbage Corp airship, so everything is just broken.
Well, here's the rule with things like this. It's okay if coincidences get your characters into trouble. It's not okay if coincidences get your character out of trouble.
True. Oh, so you're saying it's like coincidence that it's a Cabbage Corp airship and Asami knew
about
it. Yeah,
like if it's a Cabbage Corp ship and it happens to be crap, it's not as easy as some other ways, I guess, that could have gone, but it is still a little too easy.
It's very simple and very linear, and just this whole plot with Korra and Asami. And it's fine, though. This isn't what makes it bad. So, so they then cut. They cut back and forth a lot in Act 1. The Dali agent goes up to the Queen and says, the airship left Fort Bosco.
She didn't eat
there?
Him!
Fort Bosco, yeah, we're
maybe
already there.
Maybe she ate him there, and then
it goes back to it, no, it goes back to the scene. They cut a lot of back and forth. Yeah, so obviously,
oh, wait, ate him at this fort.
No, I don't think she ate him at fort. His namesake. No, we don't have to assume that he ate him at namesake fort. By the way, we're seeing a lot of like avenged Bosco things with the. Can we not just randomly sing on the podcast? Okay, anyway. Zahir says he has information for the Queen on stolen airbenders.
That actually made me shocked too. And I was like, you better not.
That was a good gambit too.
So how does Zahir know about this?
He probably doesn't. He was just lying.
Well, how does he know about the stolen airbenders?
That's true.
Well,
I mean,
but
news travels fast. He knew the Avatar was going
to
be like.
They have.
Oh no! He went to the
Northern.
He went to Air Temple Island. Yeah.
Well, he knew. I think he was aware that Korra was going out to look for airbenders.
Sure, but specifically airbenders being stolen from Bossing State. But he was on Air Temple Island.
I think
for
he was
episode.
Aware that they were like hunting down Korra because she took the airbenders. Like that, they
had
wanted
posters up.
They're aware that that's what she's doing. Probably that's not why they're hunting her. Pretty obviously, but
no. I'm like saying Zahir probably like knew that the Earth Queen was hunting her down because.
Okay, oh, I see. He could have seen wanted posters. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, I got that. But he also could have learned on Air Temple Island. So either one works. The Queen says that Mako and Bolin will find an acceptable home in prison with the rest of the dissidents. How about that one?
Using hard words for the children.
Dissidents, yeah, that's a good one. Okay, then Zahir just makes the speech and convinces her to let go of Korra when she gets there.
A very logical...
It's a very logical argument, yeah.
It was good.
I don't understand why the Queen didn't think of this on her own. It seems like the first thing you should think of. Oh, maybe people will get mad at me if I have the Avatar.
She doesn't care.
I don't think she really cares. But she cares here, so I guess she just has to have someone say it.
I think she was more concerned that she was like, oh, I'll get my airbenders back easier. It's like...
Yeah, maybe she cares more about the airbending army than...
Yeah.
Than that.
She's really lazy. I don't have to go through
See, here says he has business with Korra, but she won't be bothering you again.
Uh-oh.
So, excuse me, the big question after today, after this episode is what the heck does Zaheer want to do with Korra?
Zaheer
want to do with Korra? So like this is theoretically a hint to it, but at the same time you have to understand that everything he's saying is being said with intent to persuade the queen. So it's not necessarily being truthful here, right?
Yeah.
But it's still interesting. It's still notable. I don't think we can conclude anything from it, though.
I want to know what the ultimatum is, but we'll get to that.
Yes, that is the big question after today. What is the ultimatum? Asami breaks Korra out by tricking the guard as Korra breaks the controls, and she calls, "It's not my fault this airship is a hunk of junk."
Hunk of junk?
Yeah, I don't understand that dialogue, but okay.
Why? I mean, what would you have...
Korra doesn't talk that way normally.
Have you never... done the word hunk of junk?
No, I've never said that, actually. It's not in my dialogue.
I seriously doubt that.
I don't know why this... Korra and Asami kind of talk out of character, I think, in the desert.
I mean, in the first season, they kind
of,
like...
They did a lot of this 20s in the first dialogue. Season. Yeah, I agree. In book one, they did a lot of this, but they kind of chilled out. So
it's funny you say 20s dialogue, because they didn't have
hunk of junks in the 20s? Anyway, that was act one. Act two, Korra calls Asami. Korra says to Asami, "You're the engineer." Is Asami an engineer? Did we know this?
Sure,
probably.
She went to.
She learned everything from her dad, the Diabolical.
Did she go to engineering school? Yeah, she did learn everything from her dad. Yeah.
Yep.
She went to college, apparently. Ba Sing Se University. It exists in the world. That's something we never talked about.
Did she get her master's?
There's a university in Avatar, in Ba Sing Se.
Just one.
Ba Sing Se, yeah.
Just one. Do you think she went to the Ba Sing Se?
Okay, here is the dialogue I'm talking about with the captain after Korra says, "It's over there."
Oh, I see.
"It was probably just a mirage. The desert will play tricks on you."
Why does that... Never mind. I don't see how that's 20s dialogue.
This one's not the 20s dialogue. This is just the matter of fact and kind of...
And he keeps saying how the Earth Queen is going to rescue them.
Well, I don't know about that, but...
He's so insistent about that.
Anyway, they say the desert is haunted with spirits.
Right, so I guess that's my fault, too.
Yeah. Which, yes,
she was
actually
really aggressive when she said that.
They decide to fix the ship. Mako and Bolin are in prison. They meet this random dude.
No one cared.
Who didn't care that he was separated from his family for 4 months. But
he was rude. He's like, "I finally got some sleep." That's
good.
Really rude.
I would like to go.
What do you think of this guy? He's,
if it meant I wouldn't have to see my family.
This character is completely unnecessary, but...
but they do that.
He was annoying.
Do you think he was funny?
No.
I like the hero.
That was not amazing.
How about when he says? When he says an actor, "You know that guy?" How about that?
"He's my hero."
Yeah, like that line.
Shut up.
The "he's my hero" line was interesting.
Yeah, I think that was
get back to later.
But. Yeah, but that was like the one good line he said. I think. Anyway.
He is a terrible person.
Okay.
Bull and metal bending two times. We saw this before. What's the point of this?
There is none.
How come they keep their collars popped all the time?
Okay, well, bowling metal.
Because they're
street.
That's
guys.
What I want to know.
They got that street cred.
I don't think that.
Oh my gosh.
They got that triad cred.
That triad cred.
I don't even understand why we need to have the plot of Bull and trying to metal bend again here, and then they do it a second time in the episode.
And it's still not going to happen.
And it's just, I don't think it's interesting. I don't think it's necessarily a character development for Bolin. I just think it's like something that's happening involving Bolin. And I don't think it's necessary for the plot of the episode.
I think it is interesting if they let it go at this point and let him not be a metal bender, because I'd prefer not every single earthbender we meet to be a metal
bender. Yeah, but that's not happening, though, you know. He's totally.
But, you know, here we are.
I mean, honestly, I'd be surprised if they did let him metal bend, because they just crap on his character all the time.
I really question the existence of this plot line. I don't often do this, but I don't understand why this plot line needs to be here.
I forgot who said, I think it was either Ben or Jeff at some point earlier, but someone said it could lead to, like, I mean, at least with Mako pushing Bolin, it could lead to them having a falling out or something. I doubt that'll happen, but it'd be interesting to see that.
That would be interesting. Seemingly where this is going to go is Bolin metal bending at a crucial moment in the finale, but...
It's not going to happen, probably.
No, I think that is where that's likely to go, but that's not interesting.
Something important.
I don't think... It's like, I prefer them to do nothing with Bolin's character than do something uninteresting, right? I think that's a net negative on the show.
Yeah.
Well, it'll help him connect with his new loved one, so...
That's true. They could bring this back to Opal.
I'm 500% done with this plot.
That was my first thought when Allie was telling me that something happened. I was like, was it Opal?
By the way, something bad's going to happen to happen Opal next week.
She's going to die. I'm
she might no,
die
no, week. No.
Anyway. Or we're just never going to see her.
We'll speculate at the end.
It's going to be a UA situation.
Oh my God. Everyone
she has to go be the Jupiter.
Air bending. She has to become a Jupiter. Bison.
Hashtag Jupiter. UA situation.
Which doesn't even make sense because that's a gaseous planet. So.
She's going to become a guest.
She has to be the Mars.
Anyway, Detective Lin. What do you? Detective Lin finds the car and Naga.
The CGI was terrible.
Anyway, what do you? What do you like Lin's?
Okay, time out. I was half expecting Naga to be on the ship with Korra and Asami, and I thought the Earth Queen was going to eat her. So I was so happy to see her there.
Did we talk about the You're the Engineer line?
Yes. Yes. Where were you for that?
Yeah. Where were you?
I was out and about.
Is Asami an engineer?
Out and about.
Apparently.
Okay, good. Yes.
Valerie,
conclusion.
You're an engineer, you're the same person.
I'm not an engineer.
So Lin finds the car, Naga is knocked her down and is unhappy to see
Naga's
her.
Naga's really cute.
Yeah.
She has treats for Naga.
Yeah, seriously. She does a better job of raising Korra's pets than Korra does.
They're back to the desert, they're fixing Naga the ships. Multiple lines here. The guy with the weird voice. It hasn't looked that good since it floated out the showroom floor. That's
I like that
lines.
Guy a lot.
How'd they float it out of the showroom floor?
Floated out of
She's
the showroom
still a little
floor.
Banged up. She.
That's no
yeah.
spirit.
It's just like this. It's like
that's
just
sand whale.
Sand whale. No, they say that's no
that's
spirit.
That's no
yeah,
blizzard.
Anyway.
It's my sister.
The showroom floor is what I was
oh
type of line
gosh.
I'm talking about. They'll build a sand sailor, and we'll give that sandy beast a run for his money. Yet that's the captain again. Another line that doesn't sound natural at all.
He's a pirate, kind of, not really.
Like, these lines just seem very forced and
guy,
not in place. It's like, okay, yes, Korra kind of takes place during the 20s, 30s, but they don't talk like this. Like,
you hear that, fella? She missed
some people do.
Some people in book one talked like this. We haven't seen anyone do that since. Well, it's so out of place right now. I don't understand.
Right now, I agree, it is out of place.
It's just random back to this weird dialogue.
I don't think it's bad.
I think it's...
Just
bad.
It's annoying.
I think it's bad.
At the very least.
It's annoying, which is a bad thing. It's uninteresting, too. I don't care about cliches. That's what these are, right? These are just, like, cliche, meaningless cliches that they say instead of meaningful dialogue.
Wait, I forgot to mention something. Can we go back?
Oh, you can bring it up now. What is it?
For when, I mean, at least for, like, when Korra was, like, about to, like, argue with the people on the ship about, like, trying to get out of the desert. I'm, like, I'm kind of happy she didn't resort to, like, just beating them up and, like, running away.
Oh, she said, I'm the Avatar. You don't want to fight me.
And then she just
she talks first though. It's a step.
It's a step.
Like she's talking to people, and I really like that they're actually like make. I mean, even if it is like a small thing, I'm happy they're. I think trying to.
I think a lot of people are going to come off frustrated with Korra's character here, but maybe not because of her dialogue. Maybe more because she just like instantly breaks the controls of the ship.
Yeah, but I mean,
I think she's perfectly.
I mean, she busted the dude, and
yeah, it was like whatever.
The controls. It's something she would do.
Yeah, I'm. I think Korra's sympathetic in this episode.
I agree.
She didn't do it on purpose. She didn't say, yeah, like, punch some controls.
let's break some
let's
controls.
Break some rules.
Yeah, break some rules. Yeah.
Just threw the guy a little too hard.
Okay, Zaheer, back
James
to...
misbehave.
Back to Ba Sing Se for the important part of the episode. Zaheer goes in, perceptibly notices that the Dai Li is rushing towards the queen, which I really liked. I love everything they're doing with Zaheer's character. That was super interesting. Like, he's just... noticing everything,
he's
always thinking.
He's so not used to an evil airbender.
He's very,
really
he's formal and polite. Yeah, Zaheer spies on the Dai Li, informing the
okay,
queen.
Okay, weird, not nice airbender.
I didn't say nice airbender.
No,
Sam.
I'm saying I'm not used to an evil
yeah.
airbender. Sam
well, this
said
is,
not
by
evil.
The way, one of the things Mike and Brian have said about book three is they always wanted to do an evil
yeah.
airbender plotline. So
I'm not used to it. It's weird.
It is weird. So it's well, let's talk about this in a minute.
Dead.
Talk about this in a minute. Wow. Too soon. Too soon, okay?
Jesus, no.
Okay, Zaheer goes back and talks to the gang. It's time to make her come to us. So here's another clue about what Zaheer's ultimatum is going to be. Whatever it is, he's trying to make Korra come to them. Relevant, we'll get back to that.
Well,
okay. Then they barge into the queen's chambers. Seize these hoodlums. They fight them. They win pretty easily. How about Kazan just punching the things three times and then just taking
that
out three
Dai Li? That was awesome.
It's like, is it that easy to evade the Dai Li's earth gloves? You just punch them?
If
like,
you're an earthbender, it's easy, obviously.
You can bend lava. Like, is lava!
Why did we Wait, not... I feel like Book 2 of Avatar would have been a lot easier if we knew we could just reverse the gloves like that.
I mean, before he's a lava bender, he is an earthbender.
Yeah, but like, Toph could have done this. Why didn't Toph do
Toph
this?
Can't
because
see
Toph is blind!
Why didn't we get Potato a better... Where did we get a better Toph to punch the...
She can't see things flying through the air at her.
Why didn't Obviously, we get... You're okay. so ignorant anyway.
God.
So they get back, they start approaching the queen. She says, Gunn, get back here and lay down your life for your queen, you coward. I like that Gunn just instantly abandons her after she treats him badly. I think that was well set up.
I hope he doesn't die.
Most excellent.
Looks like Joffrey.
Oh my god.
Is the Earth Queen Joffrey? Is that what
it is? Earth Queen? I mean, considering how it went down.
So then does that mean Ghazan is... We can't say.
Is the person who actually...
Anyway.
Okay.
Zaheer goes up and says...
Oh, I meant Zaheer. Oops.
What you don't know is I don't believe in queens.
That's a very strange okay. line.
Yeah, that line is a little odd.
It was awkward. I feel like it could have been worded better, but we knew what he meant.
I don't believe in queens. So then he pulls the air out of her mouth, wraps it around her head. You think freedom is something you can give or take on a whim, but freedom is as essential as air. And without
joy,
it,
joy.
There is no life. There is only darkness.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay, so then he wraps the
talk
air,
about this
he wraps the air bubble around her head. Her eyes are bugging out. He releases the thing. She's still alive at that point. And then she, like, collapses, but we don't actually see her die. So, first of all, I'm going to talk briefly about the science of her dying.
We had a debate about the science.
Mel and I were talking about this.
This
so,
is where I tune out.
Bye, Trisha!
So, like, there's like, two ways she's literally dying here. It's from from CO2 poisoning or lack of oxygen to the brain, right?
Well, yeah.
There's also lung collapse, but I'm not sure that's a cause of death.
It can be in severe cases, but it might just be a side effect
of
the CO2 poisoning.
Here's my thing with lung collapse. It seems like her lungs would collapse here, but then she, like, breathes after he releases the air bubble. That's
yeah, but lung collapse isn't necessarily that. It's a misleading term because what it essentially means is that the lungs aren't inflating. This is how they, because my one lung collapsed once, and this is how they explained it, is that it's not necessarily it's that the motion of something collapsing, it's that part of the lung or all of the lung is not inflating, so she could be taking breaths or attempting to take breaths and her lung could still be collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
She's just not getting any air in.
Okay, yeah, so she's just lost the ability to breathe at that point?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting. I'll buy that. Yeah, so then she could have died any number of ways. So what's notable about this, I think, is how graphic... So there's like several things that are... Okay. I'm super shocked when I saw this on two levels. One is actually plot-wise, the queen dying here I did not expect at all. We've been speculating on this podcast that this whole conflict this season would lead to a huge world war, and the queen is central to that. But instead, Zaheer walks into Ba Sing Se, takes out all of her guards, and literally just kills her. What do you think of the practicality of this? Do you think it's like this easy to actually like, get to
I don't think his intent was to kill her.
So originally, well, I think eventually he would have, but probably his main goal was to get Korra. But since that failed, he accomplished his other goal while still trying to get Korra. Is it that practical? Do you buy this? Like, the Dai Li are supposed to be super powerful, and they just take out the ones guarding her. There's no more that come afterwards, and they just, like, easily take control of the city, right?
Yeah. Well, they don't even take control.
They don't take. Well, they purposely don't take it. Do you guys buy that? That it's this easy to take out the queen?
I mean, when you watch
sure.
all of her guards run away from her.
Well, only one runs away.
Well, yeah, and then they take out the rest. She
yeah,
didn't
so
have
they.
With her.
It just seems so. It's like okay, we had this whole thing in Avatar.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. I know you were going to compare it to Avatar.
Well, the Long Fang thing is different
exactly.
though because
exactly.
he was trying to keep him in the dark. Here, the queen's out and about and doing stuff.
So it's obvious who's in charge. And
Long Feng was keeping him in the dark and would naturally have a bajillion Dai Li agents around
and
make it impossible to get to the Earth King.
I think this demonstrates how much better the Red Lotus are fighting than literally anyone else in the world. anyone we've seen before, right? So I think I got a question about this on my Tumblr. It's like, who could take one of the Red Lotus one-on-one?
Nobody.
I think
really nobody at this point.
Maybe Korra, but I think other than that, no one could take any
one
of the
four-on-one.
One, pick any of the Red Lotus and pick someone in the world. So who's the weakest bender? Probably Zaheer.
Out of the four.
Out of the four, yeah.
I think
I disagree. I'd say Gazan, maybe.
Gazan later takes down.
He can do cool stuff, but he's not the most, like.
I think Gazan's the most overpowered. I think Gazan is the most powerful bender in the world right now. Gazan.
I think Zaheer's girlfriend, why her name's escaping me right now.
Kali, yeah.
Yes. I think she might be the weakest, actually.
Because it's, like, easy to fight her, like, close up, maybe.
I mean, she's still a firebender, though.
Well, yeah, but.
Combustion bender.
Yeah, but it's kind of like before, where if, you know, you strike her in that spot,
yeah,
she's going to be disabled, and that can give you an opening to, quote-unquote, finish her off.
Yeah, so
that's fair enough, but it's been proven that it's very difficult to hit her. It took four people to hit her in that one spot.
I think in terms of, like, raw bending power, it's Gazan and Pali in terms of...
I disagree.
It's the most powerful. I think Minghua has not been shown as being super adept at fighting, although she took Mako out, but it wasn't like dominant.
I mean, but here's the thing.
Like Gazan over Bolan.
You can take away earth. Like, you can't take away fire, water, or air, because it's like, you can
You definitely can't take away water or air.
Or fire, really.
I meant fire.
Point is,
I think being the combustion bender, she has the most obvious weakness.
I think that's true.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Anyway, back to the topic again. What do you guys think of the Red Lotus being so powerful as, like, a part of this plotline? Like, do you buy that, okay, suddenly now it's book four, and we're meeting book three, and we're meeting the most powerful benders in the world, who we had no idea who they were before. It's taken three books of Avatar, three books of Korra, now we're meeting the most powerful benders in the world.
I can buy it, I mean, because really, this whole, a chain of events had to happen for them to come together.
Yeah, and like Zaheer wasn't even a bender before
that. I think you, like, accept it as part of the basics
of the
season.
Yeah, I find
that
weird that Zaheer wasn't a bender before that, but yeah. Everyone else was.
I wonder how he fought beforehand.
It's almost as if.
As if.
Fate decided, well, they're missing an airbender, let me just throw them an airbender. I don't know. It's interesting.
For his fighting style, I could kind of see him like a Zuko type, but being more like, when he's wielding the swords, like a Zuko, but more acrobatic, more, I don't know what the right word I'm looking for. It's just...
So a Ty Lee, pretty much.
Sure, a Ty Lee with swords.
I think people will take issue briefly with the fact that I said that they're more powerful than people in Avatar. Whatever. Let's not talk about that. Anyway, back to the queen.
I think they're more unique.
They're certainly more unique. Skills.
You said one-on-one. I feel like they wouldn't be, at least except for Zaheer, I feel like they wouldn't be as powerful if they were in a team.
Yeah, they do a lot of things at once together.
They, like, they combo.
We kind of saw one-on-one battles
they
last episode.
They don't combo up.
We did see one-on-one battles,
Bolan
didn't we?
Versus Gazan and Minghua versus
No, that doesn't
Mako.
Count.
They're pretty clearly separate.
The only one who's really ever fought one-on-one is Zaheer.
We've also seen Zaheer fight.
He's fought one-on-four.
That they were useless.
Yeah, but
useless guards.
One-on-one.
Okay, back to the queen. So this surprised me on two levels. That this plotline happened. It was super unexpected plotline to me. They approached it extremely directly, much like the rest of this episode. It's matter of fact, but I think it works well because of how shockingly direct it is. The second thing about this is just the graphic manner in which the queen is taken down. This is, I would say, certainly the most graphic and clear death we have had on Avatar or Korra.
Oh, yeah.
Besides the end of book one.
So that's the comparison, right? The murder suicide.
The Olympics.
I think that that is possibly, that is a more clear death than this because they literally show Korra book one, the murder suicide. They show them literally blowing up. We don't see the queen literally die, but we basically do.
I mean, you can make the argument that, you know.
No, you can't.
No, just hear me out. Zhao gets pulled under. We don't know what happens to him. We assume he's dead. Now, we know he is, but that's beside the point. The queen, she's dead. They pretty much say she's dead.
Yeah.
So.
Some people are annoyed that I've seen that they say there's no life, there's only darkness, when they could have said death there. They could have made it.
Yeah,
more
but they
explicit.
Wouldn't say that on a. I mean,
right, but they showed the queen dying. What's the difference?
Darkness sounds more poetic.
He said, "There's no light."
It goes with his.
Void. Oh wait, no, he said life.
He says life. Yeah.
It goes with his enter the void crap.
Right, so that it may really
there's
may relate.
No light. There is only
and
darkness.
It is crap.
Well, no, because he says air, life. Not there. You can have. Fine, I guess you can't whatever. Have light without air, but whatever. I mean, you can, but we can't see it. I don't
you
know.
You can, because
oh my
space.
God, we're not getting into more
because
science.
Because space. Great.
Because space.
Anyway.
Let me tell you a physic.
Because science.
Let me tell you a physic. Okay. Yeah, so it's super graphic. The eyes, I think, in particular, are very striking and just crazy. I think, anyway, comparing it to book one with the murder-suicide, I think that's maybe more, they're both very obvious. That's slightly more obvious that they died. This one is way more graphic. Like, we see the entire process. I never thought we'd see anything like this. That's crazy.
It was talking about how it'd be cool.
It was very hard to watch.
It was hard to watch, yeah.
And it was hard to watch when, you know, you had to watch a second time around and knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Even worse. Because,
honestly, seeing fans be like, oh, they could make airbending so cool if they did this, and I'd be like, they wouldn't do that on the show. And then
They done did it. It's the same thing that happened with bloodbending, right?
It's like we saw it speculated.
This
on
is worse than bloodbending.
We didn't see anybody die from bloodbending.
They're both pretty bad.
I mean, you suck.
This is the
air
out
of someone's lungs.
The air out of their lungs.
So okay, some people are calling this like the secondary ability of airbending. It's like this is airbending's combustion bending, and
I think it's just the product.
It's not. This is just airbending. Right? This is just
airbending. In a different
They're just
way.
Applying it. It's not even like blood. I think it's similar to bloodbending. Bloodbending is not like a specific type. It's like a different type of waterbending. It kind of is because you have to learn to do it differently. It's more a specific type than airbending is, but they're both just bending the element. Right.
I mean, air is the most adaptive of the elements, I think, in that you can do many different things with it.
Yeah, do you, from a mythology standpoint within Avatar, are you accepting that airbenders can do this?
Yeah.
Sure.
Why not? It's not really, I mean,
there's air in the
lung, hard,
obviously.
I don't know if it's hard.
I think it makes, okay.
It makes sense.
It makes sense. My thing is that there's a lot of things you can do with bending that would make sense that they don't do.
Such as
bloodbending before it happened. You can take the air out of a room. You can, like, I don't know, stuff like that. And airbending has a lot of abilities, but this is expanding them a lot. So I think this is super disturbing. And
yeah.
I want to articulate, no, just the fact that airbenders have the ability to do this. I want to talk about that for a second. So, like, sure, two people in our world can kill each other with their bare hands, but it's not, but they can't do it from long range, and you can't do it automatically. Here, you can do this from long distance. It's impossible for the person to fight back, and you can literally extract their life from them from far away.
Yeah, here's what makes that uber disturbing for me is not, you know, you compare it to the real world, yes, like, obviously, I mean, it's graphic to talk about, I guess, but obviously, someone, you know, two people can strangle each other,
yeah.
But here, it's like, it's literally. Your air is pulled out from inside you.
It's super invasive.
And that's what I find very, very disturbing.
Yeah. I don't... See...
Like, you can get the wind knocked out of you, but, like, this is getting it, like...
I think the problem with this...
This is on a new level.
The problem with
this...
This is
on a new level.
The wind knocked out of you is a phrase, is, like, a saying. This, you're not actually getting
the wind knocked
out of you. No
pun intended. No, but you can get the wind knocked out
of you. That's not, like, actually what's happening. Okay. Anyway,
saying it's a whole other level.
I think the question of this is not on a it makes sense within the mythology standpoint, but does it work thematically with the mythology of Avatar? And I think it's the same problem with bloodbending, that this is too dark for the usual applications of the mythology of the show. The inherent bending abilities are not used in this manner. And this is going on to a level which makes them disturbing, which makes you question bending in itself, makes you question the show. Disturbing, but I think it's disturbing on a level which contradicts inherent things about the mythology. I had this problem with bloodbending. I don't like bloodbending existing. I think it makes sense. I think it's fine, but I don't think it works on a thematic level, and it's just not okay with the rest of the show. But the thing with bloodbending is they applied it so well, And I think they applied this airbending thing well here, too.
Well, it's interesting when you think about how many times, you know, Aang or Katara, someone said, oh, the bending has to be an extension of yourself. Bending is all just an extension of yourself. And here it's being used in a very, you know, it's being corrupted and perverted in a very dark way. And it does make you sort of question the idea of bending as a whole when people have these natural abilities to, you know, form these very disturbing and not normal weapons against other people.
Anyone else have thoughts on the thematic thing?
I mean, I agree that it, like, shouldn't work that way, mainly because it's a kid's show, but I think we're past the point of no return already.
It is true. You kind of jumped the shark with bloodbending. I said I don't like it thematically.
I got you.
I said I don't like it thematically. Here's my second point, though, and it makes the rest of the basic mythology of Avatar very poetic. And I'm going to give credit to whoever I saw on Tumblr who said this, but the fact that airbenders always have the innate ability to do this and choose to live as monks, as pacifists. I think it just brings a whole nother
level.
Just another level of, I don't know what the word is, but just interesting and poeticness to the basic concept of air nomads. Depth, poetic to the concept that the airbenders live as nomads and are peaceful and pacifists. And I think it's super appealing on that level.
It's kind of like in the real world. They say, you know, a gun or a sword is not in and of itself good or bad. It's who uses it. Mm-hmm. You know, a sword can be a tool for justice or a tool of destruction. It's the same thing with bending.
Yeah, but and I think building on it, it's like airbenders have guns. Everyone else has sticks. And the guys who have the guns are the ones who don't fight. Yeah. I think that's super interesting.
I agree, it is appealing in that way.
Well, it would be even more interesting if they brought that up at all.
Well, in the show. So this, to be fair, we just see it once here. Maybe we'll get more into this. I don't know, though.
Because I've always felt air is the most powerful of the four elements.
It certainly seems the most lethal inherently now. And maybe that is powerful.
Well,
I really never thought it until this happened.
Well, because, let's see, water and earth, you have to have a source.
Well, no, generally. Water you can pull from the air.
Yeah, but we've only seen, like, some high-level people accomplish that, so... And then fire, yes, you can do it without a source, but if you put them in, like, a cold, cold place, they may have difficulty. Air bending is one of those things you can do just about anywhere at any time.
Unless you put them in space or something, yeah.
Because let me explain
the next Avatar series.
Space. Yeah, always be good. Anyway, so it's, I don't know. Let me know your thoughts on that, guys.
Before is going to be called space.
Before space. Any other thoughts on just the entire killing of the queen?
I'm okay with it. I laughed.
Let's talk about that.
Yes.
What's your guys' reactions to the fact that the queen is being killed?
She is still a human person.
But so was Sozin and Ozai.
Yes, they were all human people.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of someone dying on screen. That's not... I mean, I'm just personal. Like, I didn't enjoy seeing the queen die. I think it was disturbing.
Okay. That's another thing. I'm saying, like, she got what was coming to her.
See, I don't think that's true either. So, it's... Like,
she's a good ruler. This is a deeper debate, but no.
It's a deeper debate, but it was very deeply disturbing to me.
Listen, if this were real life, I'd have a whole other opinion, but like...
Yeah, but I feel like you're
excusing it. She ate baby bison!
Okay, so that's the thing. I think your opinion on this will hinge on whether you think that she actually ate Bosco.
Maybe she ate baby bison, you can't say she deserves to die.
Did she eat Bosco? Did she do it?
Yes.
It was just a rumor.
Okay. Nibbly on Bosco.
Well, you know, if you ate baby bison, I would say you deserve to die, okay?
Wow. It's just a rumor, guys.
I would disagree with you, Ali.
Bosco.
Because I am also a human person.
A human person? Wow.
I don't think she deserves to die.
As opposed to other human persons.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, Ben?
I don't think she necessarily deserved to die, but I swear when she did... What immediately popped into my head was ding dong, the witch is dead.
Yeah, so I don't think that I think it's interesting that they choose to kill her now, because the reaction that the audience is going to have is not inherently going to be somewhat happy that a bad person died, because we don't see the queen doing that much. That's the thing. Like, we hear, I think they built built this up by having the whole, I heard she ate the bear. I think that was totally foreshadowing something happening to her.
She took a nibbly.
But other than that, we don't really see her doing anything wrong.
Well,
she imprisons airbenders, but
did
like
you miss that whole episode.
She imprisons airbenders. That's it.
I don't think you
that's
were
it.
Watching.
They said that she had the right to conscript her citizens.
And she that doesn't mean that it's a good thing.
Blindfold on.
But I'm not saying it's a good thing, but she didn't.
It's like Sozin genocided millions. I don't know if they're that.
I don't think genocided is a verb.
Tons of people in the Avatar world, and I don't think it would even be obvious that seeing him die would be happy to the audience.
Well,
oh yes, it would.
Allie,
before people think I'm like the most horrible person in the world, let me be clear. I don't think she deserved to die.
There's a difference. You know? Yeah, I think there's a difference between like thinking she deserved to die and just having a reaction to something that happens like in a show.
And I didn't like become overjoyed and gleeful at the death.
Me neither. I just
this
lived,
was
like,
always my thing though. Like even when you have the Disney villains like dramatic death, like I never really took pleasure in the idea of a villain dying, no matter what they do.
I think it depends on the type of person you are. I'm more on Mill's side on this. But like regardless of the thing, I think the audience reaction to this is interesting, because it's not like they built her up episode after episode of being this horrible person. We just hear her reputation, we see her do like one bad thing, and it's not obvious that the audience is going to be think this is a good thing. That being said, Zaheer is still a charismatic villain this entire time, even though he's literally killing someone on screen. It's just such an interesting dynamic all around. What's the audience going to think of Zaheer after this?
Everyone's going to have different
opinions. He ain't messing around.
But, like, I don't think even me, who thinks he's a murderer and a horrible person, isn't repulsed by his sight on screen after this. You know, it's not like I'm like, wow, I don't even want to listen to what this guy is saying. He's still interesting.
There's a lot more gray with some of these villains. I mean,
it's interesting because the motives are gray, but his actions are pretty easily some of the most bad we've seen.
Sure. But it kind of reminds me of a villain in Firefly I saw, or the movie Serenity, based on Firefly.
Yeah.
Like the operative guy, you know, he does bad things and he know he does them, but he's doing them for what he views as good for the world.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. Yeah, I don't think I was, like, repulsed by that guy either.
I feel like Zaheer doesn't think what he's doing is bad, though.
No villain thinks what they're doing is bad.
I think here's the interesting thing. I think Zaheer is capable of thinking what he's doing is wrong, but is justifying it with a larger cause.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Like, Zaheer, I think, is very aware that he's killing people, and that's not good. But
the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
But, like, he thinks he's... The universe like gave him this ability to airbend, so he could change the world. Right? We saw that last episode.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting on that level. So I just think the entire dynamic of this killing here. I don't know how much they thought about it, the ramifications for everyone involved, what this would do. But it's just based on the context of the season is so interesting.
I just want to know so much more about him. Like, how did he get to the spirit world, and how was he able to like communicate while in the spirit world?
Yeah, it's.
And how did he even know where Korra was when she was in Zhao Fu?
Because she followed what's his face into the spirit world, and he knew where he was.
No,
It's possible she's Zaheer was communicating with Ai Wei.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we talked about that last podcast, but there's a lot of unanswered questions with Zaheer. I agree, and I'm not convinced we're going to get a backstory episode for him this season.
Not a backstory episode, maybe a little clip, but...
I mean, we basically had... we didn't have a backstory episode for Unalaq, and that was a problem, right? Like, that was maybe the biggest problem of the season.
Until it happened.
Well, maybe they'll release, like...
Oh, wait, no, that was Tarlok.
Yeah.
Guys.
I know they already did a book one thing from Dark Horse, but maybe they'll do, like, a comprehensive Korra thing later on, and maybe we'll get...
I'm sure in the context, assuming Zaheer is a villain in book 4 as well, which it seems like he's not going away, I'm sure we'll get something from him in the show, but we'll see. And Act 3. So like right after this, the interesting thing is it comes back and then we see Zaheer acting like sympathetically, you know. He's like, Minghua, please, we're trying to help citizens like him.
Please.
Not hurt him. He does say please,
sir,
please.
Sir.
What? Please.
We're trying to help citizens like him, not hurt him, when he goes up to the radio guy.
He's so calm and it creeps me out.
He's very calm, yeah.
It's very creepy.
Well, it shows, again, you know, there's a lot more gray to his motives than the stereotypical villain.
I mean, he could be putting on a show, too. We don't know.
That's, like, typical, because this entire situation is, like, the communist revolution in Russia.
Yes.
And it's and that's very typical of depictions of different types of
yes.
revolutions like that, where they say, like, oh, the normal citizen is our friend, and making a show of sparing
exactly.
the normal citizen while murdering, you know, those in charge.
Yeah, okay. So, last podcast, we talked heavily, me and Delaney debated whether Zaheer was more anarchist or Marxist. And we concluded that me and Delaney thought he was more Marxist. But then on the forums, Toon Gal and I think Gizmo correctly pointed out that we weren't basing that on much. Like, last episode, he pretty... Marxism and anarchism end up in very similar places, but in terms of motives, he seemed more anarchist than Marxist last episode. It's interesting because now we get to this episode, and he comes off extremely Marxist here. He starts a literal proletariat like revolt in Ba Sing Se.
Is there a happy medium between those two?
They're very similar things.
Well, it's not going to be happy,
but like
tear those walls down.
What this episode turns into is Avatar does communism. That's what this episode is.
Avatar does, and on this week, Avatar does communism.
It's interesting. It's interesting because it's kind of simplifying Zaheer's motives, but at the same time, there's a layer we don't understand. But I think you could say, going one step deeper, does Zaheer actually actually want to help the common man? Or is this only to incite a common man rebellion in Ba Sing Se, which would lead to chaos, which is what he actually wants?
His show of saving that guard is what... I don't want to say skeptical, it's just it left it... I mean, it all...
The big question is it a show, or does he actually...
It seemed like a show, the way it was happening, the way he... I mean, again, that is just the way he talks.
Who's he putting on a show for, though, you know?
For the guard, for the people, just one guy, though.
And for the audience.
Yeah, but he could, like, tell people, like, oh, I mean, he didn't hurt me. He was, like, I don't know. I
think the fact that it's just one guy makes me think that this is what he believes.
It really, I don't think so.
It's unclear, though. I think it could go either way.
It's unclear. I think he's...
Ostensibly, though, this episode is definitely Avatar does communism.
I mean, yeah, logically, it seems like he was being sincere... The way it came off, though, was like he was putting on a show.
I could see both points. I think it's worth noting that it was just one random person who they could have disposed of anyway. They could have just killed him, but they didn't. And if they killed him, they wouldn't have to put on a show for anyone.
Fair enough.
That's a very fair point.
Yeah, so that's what leads me to believe. I think that's the intent of the scene, too. I think, what does Tim Hedrick think as he constructs the scene? He wants to maybe demonstrate that this is Zaheer's true meaning. I think that's what he's, like, maybe thinking. But then, either way, we get Zaheer on the radio making his speech to Ba Sing Se. Notably, he says, "The Earth Queen has been brought down. My identity isn't important. And it's time for you to find your own path. I deliver Ba Sing Se back into the hands of the people." This is all super Marxist communist stuff, right? Like, certainly we don't have the economic angle here, but this is the commons man's the proletariat rebellion. Like, it's just
very... You could make the argument there's a minor economic element with the rings.
So they break down the class distinction. Yeah, I think that's another one too. So which is what happens right after this is Kazan lava bends down the inner wall of Ba Sing Se. I think it's important to note that this is an inner wall, not an outer wall.
Let's talk about that.
It is the wall.
It took one person to do this.
It is seemingly the inner wall between the lower and middle rings. So of note, the Fire Nation never tried to destroy
the Fire Nation didn't try to destroy
the inner walls. They just tried to destroy the outer walls.
But they tried to destroy both.
Kazan, that's interesting, though, the fact that he took down the inner walls.
Kazan does not take down the outer wall.
No, but the Fire Nation tried to break through the whole city. They got through the outer wall.
The point here, Allie, is the metaphoric symbolic I'm just situation saying, that's also happening.
I think a lot of people are going to be like, oh, he brought down a wall. The Fire Nation could, like, literally Allie just said. No, the Fire Nation, Iroh didn't spend 100, like, what, how many ever days trying to break down the inner wall?
300-something days.
He was trying to break down the outer wall. That's not
plus,
what Gadon breaks
down. Plus,
there
was, like, a military
down.
And stuff going in Fire Nation. Yeah, yes. It was hard.
Yes. Eventually they infiltrate, yes, with the drill and stuff. But, like, that's not what I'm talking about here. Anyway, it's a very symbolic gesture, and it also is practical in that they literally free the lower class. So I think that this plot line, I think one of the good things about this plot line is that this is almost like the coming together of an arc that was started in the original series and has been continued in this season and is now finally coming to a head, which is the class disparity in Ba Sing Se. It's so interesting. The class disparity was set up in book two of Avatar, and we're getting the payoff now. Like, we're finally seeing something happen, the fact that they have this disparity. Previously, it's just been a characteristic of the city. Now, it's a plot point. And it's something that we're finally seeing boiling over. It's like Chekhov's class disparity in Ba Sing Se. It's been, what, like 8 years since, 8 years since Book 2 of Avatar. And 70 in-universe. And now we finally see this plot come together. This is one of the largest hanging things in anything that I've seen in like a TV show or anything.
What do we do about the rings of Ba Sing Se?
Right, so like it's like this is something that was on
the rings of Boston.
The question is,
them over there.
I was gonna say burn them down.
This on like Mike and Brian's like checklist of things to do, like the evil
to do list,
or is this something that made sense to finally do once they had the communist plotline? Either way, super satisfying to see for both series. I've used the word poetic before for something else. It's like poetic to see after we see Ba Sing Se in the original one. It's set up beautifully in this season. We again see the class disparity. We understand why we had the Bolin and Mako looking over the airship at the lower ring and then the middle ring. And it's like their reaction to each of those. That scene now makes sense. That had a purpose. It's setting up this scene. This book is coming together very well, and it's also bringing both series together very well. This plotline accomplishes so much in one episode. Anyone else feel this way?
Yeah, bro.
Yes.
Oh, not. So enthusiastic, guys. Come on.
You basically
yes!
Yay!
Yay, exactly. Happy. Anyway, I couldn't be more enthusiastic in terms of that plotline. And what they're doing with that. I think the communism comes to the Avatar world is pretty simplistic, but its applications are perfect in context of both series. I guess that's my general point. Anyway, here they break the wall down. Bolin again tries to metal bend. We kind of talked about that. But then Zaheer comes and saves the scene and says he has a message he needs Bolin and Mako to take to Korra. I think it's interesting to note where within the episode this takes place. This is in Act 3, sure, but it's not the end of the episode. Like, this is the thing that sets up next episode, it happens, like, not at the end of the episode. No, okay. Take note of that. And thank you for the comments. Next, back to the...
I mean, I don't want to... Should we talk about it later, about how... What the message
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. But I think the reason that they put it there is because they get to the climax of the desert scene, which I think makes the episode weaker that this is the climax of the episode because this was the weakest plot line.
Yeah.
But I also don't think it's super action packed.
And the CGI on that fish.
That fish. More dialogue, which I think is weird. She ain't pretty, but I think she'll do the job.
Because that's Asami's voice.
Oh, is that Asami? No, that's Asami. I thought that was the captain.
She ain't pretty, but I think she'll do the job.
She ain't pretty.
Wow. No.
Yeah, that's not how
Asami
talks.
Like that from now on.
No time for a test run. More just these weird cliches being said, right? She ain't pretty, but I think she'll do the job. No time for a test run.
Why is the test run one?
That's just a cliche.
It's not.
Anyway, get away, and they get away from the fish. Korra firebending punches out of its mouth.
Because that's apparently a best bending moment.
That's according to Nick, that's best bends part 3. It's worthy of inclusion.
Word in heaven.
And then Asami, another just random dialogue in this B plot. Anyone want to buy a slightly used sand sailor?
Why not?
You guys want to buy some
that line has dials? That the relevance of the plot to that piece of dialogue is one, to have Asami say something. Two, to point out that there are sandbenders when they pull in. But why do they need to have sandbenders when they pull in? To address the sand sailor that they created? It doesn't actually serve a purpose in the episode. It's just necessary within the weird... It's within the weird constraints they put themselves in.
Important.
Dialogue has meaning. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, why is everything they're saying being said? And in this case, this doesn't need to be said, except for the constraints of the episode they put themselves in. I don't like the line, anyway. We see that the captain has a hook for an arm. What relevance does this have?
For an arm. Not even his hand, just his whole arm.
Why is this significant? It's supposed to be like, it's not really a big reveal, but it is a reveal.
It's a foreshadowing that Korra's gonna go to Storybrooke.
What?
Oh my gosh, really?
I have no idea what that's reference.
Once upon a time.
I do not watch that. Anyway,
it's clearly, wait.
Wait.
It's clearly evidence. Because in the very next scene, we see...
Oh, wait, is it time for Hidden Zutara?
At the place. Obviously, the hook refers to fishing, which refers to water.
What?
Therefore...
What?
It's Hidden Zutara, the fact that he's got the hook. Oh, for a moment.
What?
I got someone.
Okay, here's a better Hidden Zutara. The hook makes you think of pirates, which makes you think of all.
Yeah, that would have been.
Which makes you think of I'll save you from the pirates.
I took the hard way, Dylan.
Yeah, you took the much like less Dumbledore logical.
Once said, the choice between what is right and what is easy.
Come on, so, any chance you can bring up Zuko's "I'll save you from the pirates" is a chance you need to take for Hidden Zutara.
He's saving Korra from the pirates.
Yeah,
that's
saving.
Weird because he's old now.
Anyway,
saving Aang from the pirates, so Hidden Zukang.
The guy says, "Is that a dragon?" Which I think is a good tie-in to Zuko being there.
No, it's a giant
is the
lizard.
Desert making me crazier. Is that a giant dragon?
Yeah, so I think that line was well set up. They
let's
had the
get
mirage
a drink.
Thing before. Yeah, let's get a drink. That was fine. Those dialogues were fine. Good job.
Story
dialogues,
juice.
Zuko, Tanrak, and Lin are sitting in the bar.
Wait, Naga, though.
Oh, yeah, Korra meets Naga, and Naga's happy to see Korra. Hooray, let's move on. Zuko, Tanrak, and Lin were sitting in the bar that Korra was in last episode.
Who's Avatar Korra?
Korra hasn't... I don't know. This is why we don't have you two on podcast together.
Nah, this was a bad idea.
It was a bad idea. Korra hasn't seen Zuko since she was a young girl. Why?
When I was.
Discuss.
Why not? He
discuss.
Had stuff to because do.
Because Zuko's been busy.
What is
he
Zuko
was
doing?
Traveling
he's not Fire Lord.
That was established.
What? He wasn't the Fire Lord. His daughter's the Fire Lord.
That's what I'm saying. He's not the Fire Lord. What's he doing?
He has his own stuff to do.
What?
Dragon stuff.
What's he doing? I want to know.
They just said he was traveling around
he's
the
got
world.
Stuff
doing
on,
what?
Dylan?
Lily finally having their life-changing field trips, and she was also traveling the world.
Zuko's traveling the world with Toph.
On a dragon, because you know she loves...
You didn't mention Tanrok's look of Takora, like, I approve of your new girlfriend.
Yeah, okay, so...
Oh, Tanrok was there, that's right. But I saw him, I was like, ooh.
Korra says, we got out thanks to Asami, and Tanrok gives Asami an approving nod. Notably.
Yes.
I mean, it's something that happened. That's what happened in the episode. Anyway.
It 100% happened, and we can't deny that it happened.
Yep. Then they hear on the radio, the Earth Queen's reign has been brought to an abrupt and violent end.
Good.
Abrupt and violent
Sam.
End.
What?
Stop it.
I thought you were talking to my dog.
Oh, wow. Wow,
that doesn't make
you
any
said
sense.
It the way
is
I talked to him.
The guy on the radio also says, Ba Sing Se has erupted into chaos.
Red Lotus.
Great. Yay!
So, of note is that Tanrak does not know what the Red Lotus is, which means that they didn't know the name of the group that was trying to abduct Korra when she was younger.
Good thing they didn't interrogate them or anything.
Yeah,
that's
good thing.
Smart.
They did interrogate them, they just never broke.
Oh yeah, that's true. They did say, they did refer to that earlier in the season. They didn't even name the secret or the Hydra organization that they are. Anyway.
Hail Hydra. Hail Red Lotus.
We'll discuss whether the Red Lotus is
Hydra.
This is only the beginning, says someone. Who says that?
Korra, my
Korra
God.
Says that. Great.
Who's
End
Korra?
Of episode. Who's Korra?
Who's Avatar Korra?
Get off this podcast.
Wait, you missed. Lynn is there, too. Did you say Lynn?
I said Lynn was there.
I'm just kidding.
Thoughts on this last scene? I like this last scene.
It's okay.
It happened.
Nothing's wrong with it.
It happened? Just... That's such a Sam response. Wow.
Definitely wow.
Wait, who said that? I thought that was Sam.
That was Mel.
Oh, Jesus.
What? Oh, my God.
We're not because it is a Sam thing to say.
Wow, they sound
good. It is what it is.
It is what it is. Anyway, I liked it. Okay. Let's discuss the episode as a whole, and then we'll get into our discussion points.
I have to pee.
That's nice.
That is a Sam thing to say.
That is a Sam thing.
And Sam did
say. Sam did say that, not Mel.
Sam
okay.
did say it.
Let's grade this episode. This is a tough one to grade. I think this is one of the most difficult. But before we grade, we're going to get into the Nut Picojo's Sword and Tears comments. But anyway, preface them with our grading scale. 10 is the best episode of television you've ever seen. 5 is an average episode of television. 1 to 10. But let's read comments from people who aren't here first.
It's really one,
Jeff has a lot of them.
Yes, he does.
Are they
let's
down below?
Choose, no, I have them here. Let's choose some to read. On Zaheer in the radio room, Zaheer's manner in addressing the radio operator reveals that he is perfectly comfortable with anarchy. In his calm way, he's saying, look, can you help me out? I see no reason for you not to. There aren't any rules anymore. But if you don't help me, I might just have to get rid of you because I am strong and you are weak. So here's calmness in midst of chaos reminds me of something the madman Achilles said in the novel Ender's Shadow. Killing never bothered, not even the first time. You don't understand power. If it bothers you, you aren't fit to have power. So I kind of interpreted that a different way than Jeff. I think I've noticed that the operator doesn't know that it's that there's like anarchy right now.
Or that there will be.
Or that there will be. I think it is very notable that he's calm. I also think I do agree that it reveals that he's comfortable with the chaos and anarchy. I think certainly in this episode we see Zaheer just remaining completely calm under incredible situations that are happening.
Yeah.
Okay. On Ba Sing Se succumbing to chaos. There was obviously pent-up civil unrest in Ba Sing Se, so all it needed was a little push. How did he intend to replicate his success with more stable societies like Republic City, says Jeff.
Well, they were going to kidnap the president.
Well, that's a good point. Okay. But I know, I think it's a very good point.
You laugh, but it's true.
The other cities don't have this inherent class divide that Ba Sing Se has, right? Like,
I was quick on that.
Yeah, you were quick. Good job.
Good job, Mel. Gold star.
Gold star of excellence.
And we'll read what he has to say on... Jeff says, on Bolin's metalbending, I foresee unpleasantness between the brothers stemming from Mako's insistence that Bolin can and must metalbend. Mako's shouted, do it, is his repeated assurance that he knows Bolin always has the ability to eat down, comes off as selfish, although pragmatic in the moment. So this is what we were talking about before with, will there be a rift between Mako and Bolin?
That is interesting because he's attempting to dig at like, oh, I know you always had the ability, but he's only saying that to get him to do it, to get them out of the cell.
And
yeah.
He's like being really, I mean, not like aggressive, but he's like, do it! Do it! You can do it! Come on!
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of...
I kind of want Bolin to blow up in his face.
Yeah.
With his fist.
Like you understand why Mako's behaving that way there, but I wasn't a big fan of it.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. Okay, and we'll read his comments on the letter after. Jeff says... Overall, the episode without the regicide, 7 out of 10. With the regicide, 9.1 out of 10.
Whoa.
So I don't. So you guys don't get to grade it like that. You have to grade it overall. But
that's not fair.
That's rude.
Anyway, Delaney says...
All right, wait, let me just quick math. So I'm going to average those two scores.
Delaney says, thought the episode was great and hit a lot of notes, but definitely was more in the middle as far as book 3 goes. Solid 7, maybe 7.5. I enjoyed... Asami and Korra's misadventures immensely. We've been needing more Asami, and she was just even more epic and fabulous than usual. It was nice to see her shine, and not in an overtly obvious way. The dialogue wasn't too on the nose or stilled. She's characters by action, not words. I think Dylan's note. I think Asami's dialogue overall wasn't bad. Yeah, I agree. I think it's just the dialogue in that that plot overall. Delaney. We'll read her theory on the ultimatum after, but then overall she says, the episode wasn't incredible, but it was really, really good. It's weird saying that considering the scale of what has occurred, but I wasn't really engaged throughout the whole episode despite enjoying the initial scenes with Korra and Asami. The episode definitely dipped in places, the beginning and end, that were very solid. Okay, Mel, what would you... What grade would you give the episode out of 10? Remember, 5 is an average episode, 10 is the best episode you've ever seen, and why? Go.
I was waffling between... I'll just go with an 8.... It's a term.
It's a term.
It's a verb. I'm going to give it an 8.0 because the thing is, for the most part, I did not...
So really. An 8. You'll give it an 8.
Yes.
An 8.0. I don't even know. No, you know what I said? Why I said 8.0 is because in my head I was thinking 7.9. But I'm going to go with an 8 because, yeah, the ending scene of the... I guess it's the A plot with Zaheer. But that entire plot, I did like the way that ended with... Well, I didn't like the fact the queen died, but I liked the drama of how it ended and the anarchy in Bossing Say. However, the rest of the episode was just so annoying to me that that didn't save it. So I'm going to give it an 8.
Allie, what do you think?
I think I might go with an 8.2, pretty much for, I mean, we talked about it. I think I enjoy it more after what we discussed, especially about, what were we talking about before? With, like, the kind of, like, airbending being used for evil, I guess. I mean, I wasn't really happy with it at first, but it kind of sheds a new light on, like, what the air nomads were like we were discussing before, so I guess I'd rate it higher. At first, I was going to give it, like, a 7.5, but I think I'm going to push it up to an 8.2.
8.2, okay. Sam?
What?
Hi.
Hi, what's up?
What grade would you give the episode out of 10?
How was your day, Sam? Was
all of you good? Guys suck.
My day was pretty okay.
That's good, I'm glad.
I'll give it a 6.
Why 6?
Because it was very average apart from that thing.
Yeah, you thought it didn't hold up well on rewatches.
I feel very bored.
Yeah, I could see that. Okay.
In general of life.
In general of life, but also of this episode?
Yes. Okay. Except for the thing that happened.
Except for the thing. Okay. Ben, out of 10, what would you give it?
I think I'll give it an 8.
Haha.
Why 8?
I won.
You know, is it the strongest episode of the season? No, but I think the shocking moment definitely added to it, and I don't know, I liked some of the stuff with Mako and Bolin, even though it may have been the weakest part, and frankly, I kind of liked Korra and Asami together, too, and then doing stuff, so...
Doing stuff.
Stuff and things. Doing stuff.
I mean, I don't know what else to say. It was a good episode. It wasn't the best episode.
Yeah.
But it was good, so can't really argue with that.
Yeah, I think it was good. Like, conceptually, I want to give this a 10, because I'm so in love with the idea of this class revolt in Bossing Say that they've been setting out for so long, and this shocking death. And the A-plot, conceptually, at the very least, was incredible. I also think they executed it very well, but they absolutely did not execute this episode on a 10 out of 10 level. No way. I think this is probably the second weakest of the season, only ahead of the Earth Queen. It's so hard to grade, because it does something very well, and then the rest of it, I think, is not that good. I'm going to say an 8, because I think I'm too high on it. I think I'm too high because I really don't think the B and C plots are good. I think I think the B and C plots are maybe below a 5. Like 5 is average episode of TV. The B and C plots are below a 5, but the A plot is like so close to a 10 that I'll say 8. I think it's also easier to remember the stronger parts of the episode. But overall, within the context of the season, this is totally fine. Book 3 is still doing extremely well. This episode is still good. I just hope the last 3 episodes are more The Stakeout and less Long Live the Queen.
Stakeout.
Because The Stakeout was excellent.
That was a good episode.
Anyway.
Fair enough.
Still good, though. Because an 8 is still a good score. That's like higher than I rated most of Book 2. Anyway, we kind of discussed the Marxist element of the Red Lotus already. Mel, do you have any further thoughts on this?
I mean, not particularly. I didn't listen to last week's podcast, so I don't know what you talked about there. But with this complete, you know, takedown of the monarchist figure and just sort of the literal and metaphoric breaking down of the barriers between classes, it has gone fully Marxist and the first thing that comes up into my mind is the communist revolution in Russia, because that's basically what happened if you look at it in a simplified way, which it wasn't simplified, but that's essentially what happened. It's like destruction of the hierarchy of power and a complete just give it back to the people.
Right. So what you don't get here is the hero being like, okay, we want to share economic resources among everyone and the abolishment of the government. But he practically what he's doing will lead to communism, right? This is how you get there. But it's also how you lead to anarchism. So it's kind of both. But the difference, I think, to me, is that he's starting this lower caste rebellion, which is characteristic of so many Marxism and what we've seen practically from Marxism in history.
There is a thought of anarchist communism.
They're very similar. There's an entire Wikipedia article on anarchism versus Marxism. They're very similar concepts. Like, that's why it's very hard to debate this. But to me, I look at this episode and I see, okay, this is Avatar does communism. Maybe it's not exactly what's happening, but this is, I think, what a lot of people are going to think of when they see it. And I think if they keep going down this path, as a hero could very easily try to implement some form of Marxism in the world. I'm excited, very excited by the thought of Avatar does communism. Like, this is an interesting plot line to me.
It's interesting that it takes place in their world's 1920s as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There is an ideal that is actually called anarchist communism, which is basically in favor of the abolishing every form of hierarchy in favor of common ownership and that sort of thing. But I think even that is too organized for what Zaheer wants, based on what he said to Korra and what we see.
I think the problem with characterizing Zaheer at this point as fully Marxist is that it seems like he wants chaos. It really seems like that's what he wants, but it's not clear yet.
Like, that's the difference is that communism versus Marxism versus anarchy is that he doesn't want the common ownership between things. He just wants chaos.
Yeah, it's not clear, but it seems like his end goal is more anarchist than Marxist. But the process right now seems very Marxist to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
All right. Leave us your thoughts on the forums on this. Next. Let's leave the ultimatum last. What we have not seen yet from the trailers is now only Kai falling down and there being smoke coming out. Last week we said there are three scenes from the trailers we still haven't seen yet. Now there's only one. Kai falling down.
There's two, aren't there?
No, there's three last week. The two that we saw were the desert fish and Gazan breaking down the wall. They didn't show the wall falling, but they showed the beginnings of that. So Kai's falling. Do we think that's next episode?
Possibly.
It's been so long.
We haven't been at the Northern Air Temple in a while.
You have no idea what's going to happen next episode.
Well, how would we get back to the Northern Air Temple?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Right, so, okay, this ties in...
where they're heading next?
This ties into the ultimatum. So here's the problem I have with assuming that we're going to the Northern Air Temple next episode. Zaheer in this episode says, let's make Korra come to us. I think whatever the ultimatum is going to get try to get Korra to come to Ba Sing Se. So what do we mean by the ultimatum? Well, that's the title of the next episode.
Everybody.
And the thing is that Zaheer goes to Mako and Bolin and says, take this message to Korra, I'm freeing you. Now, the really interesting thing going into next episode is why does Zaheer free Mako and Bolin if he's trying to get Korra to do what he wants?
It's interesting because the first assumption when he said, oh, I have use for these two was bait
for Korra, but he frees them to send a message to her. What could he possibly say to get Korra to do what he wants right now?
I'll kill the air.
While giving them back to her. Like, what does he have that...
What could he do? It's the chaos in Ba Sing Se, sure, but how is Korra going to Ba Sing Se right now going to solve any problems? She could try to rally the citizens as a leader. Like, she would be the most natural one to rise up, maybe besides Gunn, as, like, a new leader. For Ba Sing Se.
That's the opposite of what he wants, and if...
But that's not
what
he wants.
I would hope that she realizes that.
But, like, that's the thing, though. Like, But I'm thinking from Korra's perspective. Why would she go back? She go there now? What's she going to accomplish?
Hopefully she's smart enough to ask herself that question and say, obviously, whatever he would want to bring her back to Ba Sing Se isn't good.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting... I mean, if you parallel this against Book 2 and Avatar, how everyone got back to Ba Sing Se and why, I can't think of a logical reason, any message that he would send her that would get her to Ba Sing Se.
But that's what it is, though, right?
Like, yeah.
So
I mean,
what is it?
I think his plan is to sit there and get her to Ba Sing Se.
Or to the air temples.
So, okay.
Yeah, but why would he want her to go to the air
temples? What Jeff has to say on this. The hero previously said to his crew that they were done chasing the Avatar, that it was time for her to come to them. I theorize that the Red Lotus is on its way to the Northern Air Temple, a move sure to draw Korra there immediately. So, there's the point. Zaheer doesn't say, I'm going to make her come to Ba Sing Se. He says, I'm going to make her come to me.
You're going to kill all the baby bison.
So this...
Oh my god.
Oh,
I can't live
gosh.
Through that again.
They did that already. So here's what... Here's a logical thing that would happen is Zaheer goes and threatens the airbenders in the Northern Air Temple. Korra needs to go to fight him there. That would be a good way to get Korra to come. The problem is, what does that have to do with anything he did in Ba Sing Se? Why was that necessary? Because
Well, you could make the argument that motives and organization of plan doesn't matter to him. I mean, look at what he said before. He caused chaos in Ba Sing Se because he could, and that's what he wants for everywhere else. And he sent a message. Now he's done there.
Yeah.
So, like, it seems to me, the structurally in this episode, that Zaheer's motives in Ba Sing Se, although maybe also fitting his goals, or seem to be when he says, I'm going to make Korra come to me, it seems like what he's doing in Ba Sing Se relates to that. That's the way it comes off in the episode, I think.
Yeah, but he had no plans about Ba Sing Se until he learned that she was going to Ba Sing Se. And then he was like, well, I got to go to Ba Sing Se now.
Yeah, like, it's not like this was number one on his priority list. Korra is his number one priority. Whatever he's doing is going to relate to her. That's what I'm saying. So yeah. Somehow Ba Sing Se relates to Korra. Delaney...
Fang died there.
Can you not?
He did.
Wow. Okay, but that was the first time he
Too soon.
To life.
Delaney
he
thought...
He got brought back to life the first time.
Delaney...
It was the first time.
Just the first time he died.
Fang died twice. The first time it was okay. Delaney's thoughts on the ultimatum. Staking a little mini theory flag here. I believe the ultimatum will involve Korra having to choose between joining the Red Lotus slash not interfering, handicapping herself, like Jess suggested, and the lives of the rest of the world leaders, such as Tenzin, Honora, her father, etc. I really feel confident in the latter half of this. The first part has to join out of the way. I'm not too confident on the exact mechanism. Though we know that they want to eliminate leaders, I believe they would be willing to end other reigns without murder and violence if Korra agrees. They seem very keen on her cooperation and know she would never kill those she deemed innocent. Her refusal could result in an attack on the Northern Air Temple targeting Tenzin, as that would be the closest housing of a leader to Ba Sing Se.
I just get so hung up on the fact that they said they wanted to end the Avatar, whatever that means. And I feel like whatever they're doing, it's not that they had this plan and Korra's incidental. I think Korra is a focus. With everything else revolving around
her. So this is the one of the main theories right now is, okay, we're taking it, they know they want to take out world leaders, and we know that we're going to go to the Northern Air Temple because Kai is falling, and we know they want to lure Korra. So him, Zaheer threatening Tenzin seems like a good way to accomplish all of these.
I think Delaney's right.
I don't understand how it relates to Ba Sing Se. That's my thing.
Who cares about Ba Sing Se?
This episode is entirely about Ba Sing Se.
No one cares. Okay. But I mean, like what you said, his Ba Sing Se wasn't his top priority. Korra is, so it's like
he went to Ba Sing Se because Korra was going to be there.
That's the thing.
He's all about Korra.
Like,
whatever he wants to whatever they want from their stuff has nothing. I mean, he wants to eliminate world leaders, but they tried to. You know, they were trying to kidnap Korra when she was a child. I mean, it's still. I think all revolves around her. And whatever they wanted for her as a child in terms of wanting to train her is obviously. Not what's happening now.
Okay.
I feel like it's a worse situation.
This goes back to the point. What is Zaheer going to do once he finds Korra? I think the leader in the clubhouse, so we have pointed out by someone anonymous who's listening, that Korra is a world leader as well. So maybe Zaheer wants to end Korra. The problem with that is that, as Mako pointed out, Zaheer did not end Korra when given the chance. But it could relate
like
to that.
A while ago when nobody seemed to pay attention.
No.
I'm just saying.
Here's the leader in the clubhouse on the theory of what Zaheer wants to do with Korra. It's the Jeff theory from last episode, except twisted a little bit, which Jeff thought brought up in chat. Someone on the forums has independently brought this up. Zaheer wants to do something with Korra. We know Zaheer wants to do something with Korra. We know Zaheer wants to have equality throughout everyone. And we know Zaheer wants to have chaos. What does all three of these things. Zaheer somehow uses Korra to make everyone be able have the capability of bending all four elements. Everyone in the world.
That's what I just thought about.
Everyone in the world. So what this accomplishes, it uses the Avatar's spirituality and spirit bending. Only Korra could do something like this on a mass scale. Two, it makes everyone equal. And three, it would certainly launch the world into chaos. If everyone could suddenly
end the Avatar as well.
It would also be the end of the Avatar because she was not special anymore. If everyone can bend every element, then there's certainly everyone's going to, there'll be a lot of rebellions and stuff, and it'll be crazy, and certainly there'll be chaos. I think this makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, bro.
The problem is, are they going to do this crazy thing in the finale?
Well, they're building it up so much. They might. It's got to be something because, the past two episodes have been, "What do you want with Korra?" Oh, you'll find out, and then they leave it at that. if it's something stupid,
you're laughing, but that's what it really is.
They're vampires, and they want to suck her blood because love the Avatar.
They just want her autograph. They're big fans.
They're intense women. Times four.
Yeah, exactly.
Intense woman.
Intense.
Yeah. So,
intense red lotus.
I get the question then is, would this be a thing we would want to see in the finale? The thing is that this would be another crazy Mike and Brian deus ex machina finale.
It seems very, very plausible, and it does tie a lot of ends together and makes a lot of seemingly random plot lines meet. But it's also very, very fantastic.
It's crazy.
It could easily happen. But
so here's if we're going by this, here's the rest of the season. Somehow they get to the Northern Air Temple. Zaheer tries to use Korra to do this. Korra doesn't do it. Zaheer puts her in a position where she has to. The season ends on Korra giving everyone all four elements, and then we see chaos breaking out in the entire world. Cliffhanger.
Why does Zaheer assume she can do this if Korra doesn't even know why people are popping up with airbending powers?
Well, obviously Zaheer would know how to do this and teach Korra how to do it.
Why would Zaheer know how to do this if he literally said he woke up one day with airbending as a gift from the universe?
Well, he found a library like Xiao.
Oh my god.
And read how to do
it. Oh my god.
I don't think that's what happened.
No, it's a good question. Why would Zaheer know about this? I don't know. Maybe,
why not?
Maybe this is ancient knowledge passed down within the Red Lotus.
Within his cell?
No, within the Red Lotus. And
within his cell?
Zaheer is the next in line to learn.
Someone wrote the story on the walls of his cell.
Here's the thing, though, is what is the timeline on the Red Lotus? Because he made it seem like the Red Lotus formed after the White Lotus started, as he put it, serving the Avatar as glorified bodyguards.
Ancient knowledge that has been passed down for 70 years and has gotten to Zaheer. This reminds me actually of a sect of Tibetan Buddhism, which has which the leader developed this the path and fruit system, this new revolutionary thing, and then their sect was the only one that had it, and it was passed down throughout the leaders of the sect. But yeah, so I don't know. This seems like something that could happen. The thing is, this would also tie it into the Red Lotus.
I don't want it to happen. I really don't.
Ali, any theory someone throws out, you say, no, I don't want that to happen.
Everyone should just be happy.
I don't know how you're imagining this season ending.
Not in a way that has everyone being the Avatar, because it's nuts.
Anyway, last thing. Last thing before comments from you, Slash, wrapping up. Where are we on is Sue evil? I think that's also the big running thing this season.
She's evil.
I still have questions. I mean, we definitely shooed away from a lot of that and the suspicion that she let the Red Lotus in, but I still got my eye on you, Beifong.
I think where we could be going with this is Zaheer isn't the main force after the season. Zaheer's plotline wraps up, but the Red Lotus is still the major opposition, and Sue emerges as the main villain in book four.
Mm. I don't know if she'd be the main villain.
Interessante.
I still think Sue is evil, but we only have three episodes left, so I'm less convinced it will manifest now. That's where I am with that.
I mean, we waited six, seven years for the Ba Sing Se plotline to work itself out, so
now we're here.
Sue is secretly evil, but we won't know until the next series after Korra. That's the next, which there won't be, but yeah.
They're just going to tweet, by the way, she was evil.
So we'll never know, and then they'll wrap it up in a comic.
Oh, it's the comic, yourself, yeah, exactly.
You say to yourself, I waited 6 years to find out what happened to Zuko's mom. And this is what I got.
Ben, I don't think we've heard from you on this. What do you think of the possibility that Sue is evil? They wanted to do a movie
and Nick shot it down. So.
The possibility that she is evil?
Yeah.
I'm not ready to buy that yet.
There hasn't been a ton of stuff, a ton of evidence. We didn't see her at all this episode. How are we supposed
80%.
To...
80%.
I mean, no, at this point, based on what I know, I'd put it at like 40. No, 5%.
5%. The thing is, the big evidence is Sue and the Metal Clan said that the system of the Queen is outdated. Okay. Don't you think so, Korra? And then later we hear the entire speech on
it's
how.
It's interesting that the first person who said that to the audience was Sue, and then we circle back with Zaheer.
I don't think
that was a coincidence.
But I don't know. I mean, this city seems very independent of the Earth Kingdom in a lot of ways. Maybe she's like, I don't really care for her.
It makes sense on its own, true. But I think, storytelling-wise, it would make a lot of sense also.
From a writer's perspective.
Yeah. Well, sure. I'm just not ready to buy it.
I can see that, because there's been so little. Yeah. But also,
yeah,
I think there's...
There's so little plot, but I will say, from a writer's perspective, dropping that early and then having it circle back with Zaheer is not... It seems...
Unlikely to be a coincidence. I also think we've seen this season, I mentioned a few of them this episode, this podcast, that we've seen things from previous episodes come back all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Just didn't have relevance now. What did I point out having relevance now? The Mako and Bolin just looking at the different rings of Ba Sing Se and commenting on them. That wasn't just an establishing shot for Ba Sing Se. That was directly going to relate to what's going to happen later.
And I will say, it's a very intelligent way to do it if this is what they're doing, because it doesn't immediately draw attention to Sue. And then this is what we have happening, where people come back and say, well, this happened. And other people are like, well, we haven't seen enough of it yet, but there's still suspicion there.
I think storytelling-wise, it would make a lot. It would be well done. I would do it. Like, character-wise... Like, you want this super sympathetic, matriarchal, incredible woman to have a real big reason to be antagonistic into their terms of
plot. That's the thing. I want to know her motives, and if they're not good, then it goes out the window.
So, I think if Sue is Red Lotus, I think we're going to have a Hydra situation here. Hydra in terms of the Marvel Universe, where there's just a lot of people around the world who are actually Red Lotus who we didn't know. We already know Unalaq is Red Lotus, maybe Sue's Red Lotus, maybe Amon was Red Lotus. Also, what's his name?
That guy.
That's really Julie and blank and
Varric
being I blank Julie, Julie. I like how I remember Julie.
Are you kidding?
You remember because he's just constantly saying Julie.
Exactly. Varric being Red Lotus would be super interesting as well.
Varric.
Also, this is a good way.
He did like hold the president hostage, didn't he?
He did. So that relates to Zaheer's
men. But he's a captain of industry. But I guess we don't have their economic standpoint yet. Their authoritarian standpoint.
If we have a Hydra thing going on, which is random people all being part of the secret,
you're giving away the plot of Captain America 2.
Now that you said it, I gave it away. Jeez, random people being part of the secret organization. We could tie the entire series of Korra together. Amon was Red Lotus, and Unalaq was Red Lotus, and Varric was Red Lotus, and now it all makes sense, but maybe not actually, but at least we're trying to tie it together.
It's interesting, though.
Yeah.
It would be interesting.
It'd be interesting.
I don't know if I would be happy if they tied it in or mad.
The thing is,
you know what, Mel, be quiet. Yeah, it seems like they pulled it out of their butts if they did it that way.
The thing is that this seems like more of a book four
plot. Well, anything, if they harken back to book one, is going to seem like they pulled it out of their butts because they didn't know they were doing three more books
That's
when they did
That's why I'm saying it's kind of like...
So we have to accept it for what it is.
I agree. But I think this is more of a book four plot, and I would be surprised if we saw it at the end of the season. All these people are Red Lotus. What?
Yeah, no, I don't.
I'm Red Lotus.
Mel, wow. We have Red Lotus operatives.
What if she was just pretending to be nice?
Mel, you would be the first one I'd suspect to be Red Lotus in the podcast.
I'm not good.
You're probably not wrong.
We're gonna have to
send your opinions on who in the podcast is Red Lotus.
Who's in the Red Lotus?
Tell us, yeah.
Murder Carseyism, which
one? It was like a murder mystery party, but everyone would blame me.
Yeah, because you'd be the one to blame.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you go to a communist meeting in 1932?
You know, actually, I did. I'm a lot... We talked earlier about how I'm much older than I look.
Okay, anyway. Let's...
You're banned from everything ever.
Let's get to your guys' emails, asks, voicemails before we wrap things up. But first, two things we didn't talk about previously. Nick once again puts the episode up early on Amazon Instant Video and Google Play this morning, hours before Nick.com, although this time they did correctly put the episode up on Nick.com around noon. It was actually like 11:40. So, I don't know.
Around noon, not actually noon.
I wonder if it's intentional, though, putting it on the pay websites first. It seems like not, because if they wanted to just put it on pay websites to start, they could do that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I doubt it's intentional.
They're just dumb.
I mean, they've messed up before. It wouldn't be the first time.
I mean, they messed up all the time. The second thing is, we now see on Nick's video player, there is a Y7 rating in the top right corner for the episode. Let's read the TVGuidelines.org description of what a Y7 show is. Directed to older children, this program is designed for children age 7 and above. It may be more appropriate for children who have acquired the developmental skills to distinguish between make-believe and reality. Themes and elements in this program may include mild fantasy violence or comedic violence, or may frighten children under the age of 7. Therefore, parents may wish to consider the suitability of this program for their very young children.
Mild violence.
Yeah, I don't buy this being Y7. Here's the thing I've learned about TV ratings in the research of this, is that they are completely arbitrary up to the network. There's no council, like the MPAA for movies. The TV networks just choose whatever rating they want.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can report things you think are wrong to whoever overlooks this, but...
I mean, it's just, it's not, like, even, like, from before, like, with... Back in, like, season one, it wasn't, like, really mild violence. It was, like, kind of disturbing to watch, like, with the explosion.
Yeah. I mean... I think
this is so much worse. So.
There's the TV Y7 FV, which is fantasy violence. Programs where fantasy violence may be more intense or combative than other programs in this category. Seems like it should at very least be that, this
exactly,
episode.
That's my point. Like, yeah. It's not mild violence. It's kind of like, it's hard to watch sometimes. And like for the kids, I like can't imagine what they're thinking.
The problem is that it's also, the Y7 and Y7 FV also imply that it's for children. I feel like a correct rating for...
7 and up too, that's kind
of... A correct rating would be TV PG or TV 14, both of which are not in, it's not inherent that the show is being directed at children, because it's kind of hard to watch this episode. You can make cases that previous core episodes were directed at children. Not this episode. This episode is about communism and killing and regicide. Like, I don't see how we're doing
not
this.
For seven-year-olds.
Yeah, so this rating's dumb. I wonder if they'll change it at some point.
I'm pretty sure they won't. They really don't care enough.
I don't think they care. It's also not on TV. It's just on their website.
Exactly. And even if it was on TV, they wouldn't care. That's the sad part, but it's true.
Let's get to some your feedback. I just got on Twitter from what's his screen name? I don't remember what went by on the podcast. Was he on the podcast Art? Was it Lords Angeles, I think?
Oh yeah.
I don't remember what he went. I don't remember what he went by on the podcast. Was it Arthur? I don't know. Yeah. He says, just when I don't think Cora can get any better, this happens. 10 out of 10 once again. It left me breathless, winky face. Not okay. I'm not okay with the breathless puns. Okay.
People? Oh God! Wait, that took me a minute.
No, Nick also tweeted now with the
Nick,
latest Legend of Korra episode took our breath away.
They do a lot of messed up things.
Not okay, Nick. Okay.
Not okay.
Bending guy emailed us asking if I can pull it up. Bending guy on the forums. Oh. I want to know what you guys think of all the leaks that have happened with this book. Thanks. So, okay, so we talked about this earlier, but here's my thing. I don't care if an episode leaks, if it's in high quality. We're watching it online anyways.
If it's in high quality. If it's not, then I'm not.
The episode that leaked this week was in perfect quality. So here's the thing. A lot of people reacted to this leak by, wow, this is so disrespectful to Mike and Brian. No, it's not. This is disrespectful to Nickelodeon, but I don't give a f*** about Nickelodeon.
Wait, you can't
so
swear.
I'm going to bleep it out, okay? Like... Who? I'm so done with them. They released these gifts early, and they completely spoiled the biggest moment of the episode. Who does that?
The other thing too is like people are like, "Oh, let's not watch it because it like does, like you're not going to be able to like support Korra." It's like they're thinking you can only watch it once and never watch it again.
So here's the
thing: you can watch it online, it like from the leak and then watch it on Nick when it actually happens.
So it's multiple points. Is this disrespectful to Mike and Brian watching leak early? No, we're watching it in the format they intended. It should be on TV. Okay, here's the difference. The episodes that go up on Nick.com, I don't know what the leaked episode was, but the episodes that go up on Nick.com have a frame rate of 30 frames per second. I've been told. But this is not what the frame rate is intended. On TV, the frame rate is 24 frames per second. So it's possible that Nick.com is not putting the episodes up in a proper frame rate, which causes some blurriness.
Uh-oh.
It really doesn't matter, but whatever. That's very minor, and watching on Nick.com would also cause this frame rate difference. There's no difference in the format. It's not disrespectful, Mike and Brian. Why is it watching on Nick.com better than watching on an episode you downloaded? It doesn't matter. So here's the thing, though. Why do we need to support Nickelodeon? Because they're in control of Book 4. So we do need to make sure Korra gets adequate numbers so that it's released online, at least, Book 4.
What you do is
if you watch a leak,
If
you watch a leak, also watch on Nick.com. That's it.
Exactly.
It's very simple.
And don't hate on people who are watching leaks. It's hard to resist.
There's no difference. It's not disrespectful. Stop with the high horse, and I'm so done with Nick. There we go. Okay. Next, we got Tumblr ask, or I don't know. Okay, so I got this from my personal account. I assume this is for the podcast, but what's the problem? I think they sent an ask last week too. What's Aheer did to the Earth Queen is beyond bloodbending levels of invasive and wrong. So much so that it turned me off from him completely. I was legitimately sick in watching the scene and was hoping that a miracle would happen to stop this madman. I know it freaks people out, but I'm wondering if it's just me that bothered this much. Still no clue what the group wants with Korra though, so that's keeping me invested enough not want him to disappear off my screen completely. So we discussed this too. I don't know if I have this reaction. I was certainly sickened, but, like, he's still compelling to me.
I agree.
Yeah.
Not sickened with him, but, like, I'm sickened with what he did.
I am sickened with him, but
I mean,
at the same time, he can still be compelling, because he is. Like, he's.
I'm not sickened with him, but, like, that's a
personal thing, I don't know.
I guess.
I
don't know. I think I have to watch it again.
Like, I think people are going to have a lot of different reactions to,
yeah.
to that.
I feel like most people would agree that they were, like, they don't want to look at him anymore, kind of, but like,
I think a lot of people
interest
are not,
still compels.
I think
them.
A lot of people are not going to be like happy, but are going to be like,
they're going to be like, wait, what?
Like,
just
this
happened.
Was,
I have to find out more.
But also it's like, oh, this is good, I guess, because she was a bad person. I think that's the prominent reaction. I'm not sure.
That too, yeah.
But I kind of agree. What's the problem? Just got another ask. Rain in Republic City. With dashes between the words, says, "Hey there, in an earlier podcast you mentioned you didn't see Korsami becoming canon, partly because no one could do that on Nick, etc. Well, this week there was talk about Bubline from Adventure Time being canon. One of the creators said that in some of the countries the show airs, homosexuality is even illegal. So maybe that's also part of the reason they don't do it on Korra, which is shameless nevertheless." Yeah, Sam was talking about this with us. If you couldn't tell, Sam and Ben are not here. We're recording the segment separately. Who was on the...
Yeah, it was us four.
Yeah, there's four people. Okay. And Mel neither. It's just me and Allie right now. Sam would like
you
to...
You guys are going to leave. Don't
leave. I assume Sam would talk about this. But yeah, I saw this. It was at like a Barnes & Noble panel.
I mean, I would talk about this too if I mean, I am like invested in it, but like, I mean, pretty much she hit the nail on the head.
Right. So I think what the one of the people said was that this can happen in like the supplemental books, the comics that they're doing.
I feel like it's I don't know if it's a Nick thing or if it's a Break thing that they wouldn't do it, because it's kind of
right. So we talked about this. I see no evidence that it's a Nick thing, because I don't think Break have attempted it.
I mean, it's like, it's not like a Nick thing that they wouldn't do it, but I don't see like why they would try to push it, because they had never done it before.
Yeah. Well, we don't know, because they've never tried it.
But back to
the Bubble Line, which is an Adventure Time ship. If you're unaware, Princess Bubblegum and Marceline are like, it's like the most heavy hinting you can possibly do to the fact that they had a past relationship. They're both females, and it's just done extremely well, and it's not just heavy hinting. At some point, it's basically obvious, but some people just don't.
I think she said
on
they
it.
Were like someone went up and they went, you know, they're dating, right, or something like that.
Yeah, so
they dated.
They did date. Yeah, it's very obvious if you watch the show. And they got the one of the people, I don't know who, was at this Barnes & Noble panel, and apparently they said it could happen in like comic form, and also that You can't do it because some of the countries, the show is, it's homosexuality is legal. So that's...
Stop swearing! Oh my god! How come I'm not allowed to swear?
Well, just for this segment, okay?
Oh my god. Okay.
That's... Okay, that's just making this hard, very hard for me to edit. It's complete, like, who, what? It's because the country's that there is in? No. That's ridiculous. That's might be, it might be what Cartoon Network is telling
them.
This
is a whole other podcast we could talk about.
I know, we will. And this, that, it's like, that must be what Cartoon Network is telling the creators of this and to justify. Yeah. But that's complete crap.
Yeah.
It should.
That's nothing new, really. It's been that way for a while. And I mean, it sucks.
I mean, you could maybe see that having this would prevent distribution in some minor countries for the show. But like, what countries would that be? That would be extremely.
What minor countries show Korra, first of all?
Like Russia, I think, is the biggest country that has anti-homosexual laws at this point. Like, but that's it. And there's not even that many people in Russia. It's just a big country. So
well, there's a lot of people in Russia.
There's a lot, but it's relative to the size of the.
I think
the
you're diminishing.
Who cares about Russia? Screw Russia. Come on. We don't need to. Okay. But anyway, it's crap. No, these are excuses. And I'm not saying that Kurosami needs to happen and these are the excuses they'd be giving. This is more about Bubble Line. But yeah, Kurosami could, but I don't think.
Could
don't think
potentially, but probably not.
Because of dumb network excuses like this would probably not happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we're not losing hope, okay?
It's still.
Kurosami will save the world.
One day, I believe day. That Kurosami will save the world, yeah. Okay, I think that's all we got for asks. Thanks, guys. Yeah, I know I said get them in by 1 p.m., so didn't have much time. But anyway, let's wrap things up. I've been your main host, Dylan. Co-hosts have been Mel, Allie, Sam, and Ben.
Shut up, God.
Technical directors.
He's trying to talk.
Technical directors. This is me the entire podcast, and you two are having your private conversations
I'm
on
dying.
Low volume.
This is like when you yell at us for conspiring during Cards Against Humanity, when I literally say, Allie, pick the right card.
You two very obviously conspire.
No, we don't.
Technical directors, AJ,
no,
Kevin, Jeff. Music credits, the Yoshida Brothers, Jeremy Zuckerman, Luke Tripp. Logo and banner by Kevin. Dongu Fang's owned by Jake. Contributors, Garrett, Sierra, Nick, Devin, Lexi, Colin. Who are scroll
no,
to
the money Sierra Miss
Nick at Night, Rooting to Booty and Coin. Mel, I didn't open my Snapchat during the podcast. Yeah. Wow.
You make Dylan angry.
Email us Dylan at dongwufang.net, Tumblr, dongwufang.tumblr.com, at dongwufang on Twitter. You can you can follow our personal blogs. I'm going to link. Go to the Tumblr post that I made for this one. I'll link to everyone who's on personal Tumblrs. Ask if you have any sort of questions for me. Send me an ask on Tumblr, Dylan FTSW, and on Tumblr. And also go follow Sam's Ask blog, which is something, and Melanally's Ask blog.
Which is something.
Mine is Ask Sam or something. Who cares?
Ask Sam or something. Who cares? Ask Melanally FTSW. Great. Or Allie and Mel. I don't remember which one. Who even knows? Anyway, that's all for this week. Send us, I don't know, whatever.
Don't send us anything.
What should we end on?
Wait, we have to end on punk rock.
Punk rock is not involved in this
what
episode.
What are you
it
talking about?
So involved
we
in
talked
this
about this yesterday.
I would like better suggestions.
Ding dong, the witches.
Yeah, that's right. Y'all don't have better suggestions.
Wow.
What did they say?
I just made one, so.
Two out of three. I think we ended on whatever out of whatever last week, though. Did we? What did we end on last week?
I didn't really say anything.
When have you on last week?
This is a testament to the dialogue in this episode that we can't think of something to end on.
Were any of you on last week?
This is how I judge dialogue in the episode.
I don't think you were. Yeah, we could do two out of three. Not bad. I think that's a good one.
Okay.
Or what else?
Or what else?
I mean, we could do, like, Hunk of Junk, but I didn't like that, so I don't want to.
No, that was stupid. No one really said anything interesting.
You were about to say Zutara, what the heck?
No, I was going to say Zuko as if thinking, did he say something, but he didn't. He's just like,
let's go get a drink.
Let's go get a drink, I like that.
Why?
I don't know.
Because it's good. Because
I need water.
Because we all need a drink.
Story juice.
Look, I'm going to say 2 out of 3. You all can say whatever. Thanks for listening, guys.
Okay.
1, 2, 3. 2 out of 3. Not
Let's
bad.
Let's go get a drink.
I need a drink. I really need a drink. I'm going to...